Was everybody ready for this?
Yes.
All right. See, I went to the closet and I pulled out the Christmas sweater. I've got the beard. I'm going for Santa Claus, so it looks good. We're there. It's here. I can't believe it. Ryan's been stressing out for weeks about Celebration of Light, so we're ready. It's here. It's upon us. And we all know what Christmas brings. Everything, the sights, the smells, the sounds that we're so familiar with. You know, the jingling and ringing of the bells, the crinkling of the wrapping paper, and of course, the music. We are used to hearing the music. Now, let's see a show of hands. How many of you are already listening to Christmas music? How many of you would admit to actually starting to listen to it before Thanksgiving? Oh, man, we've got some hardcore folks out there. I mean, I found my essential Christmas playlist on Apple Music. No surprise there, right? Carrie has her radio station tuned to More 104.1, Des Moines Christmas Music Station. Is that what it's called? Yes. And she leaves it there. I mean, I think she slaps hands if people try to change her station when they get in the car. You know, music is such an important part of the celebration of Christmas. It has become so much of who, of what we celebrate and how we celebrate. Music is just so important to us. And even in church, as we sang this morning, the songs we sing drastically change during this time of year. And we'll sing these songs this month, and some of them we'll put away and not see again for the next 11 months as we save those for this special time of year. And because music is so important, we wanted to highlight that. And over the next coming Sundays, over the next several Sundays, all the way through the end of the year, we're going to look at some of our favorite Christmas songs. They'll be not the ones we sing in church necessarily, but the ones that we're all familiar with. And we want to look and see how do these songs shape and influence us, especially at Christmas. Because it's no doubt that they certainly do. I have to admit, for this message today, I had a hard time narrowing it down because there are so many songs that fit in this category. There are so many that are captured by this theme of things. So we heard White Christmas. I thought about, because Lynn loves Elvis, I thought about throwing Elvis and a little Blue Christmas up there. You know, I'll have a blue Christmas without you, you know, that kind of thing. There we go. That's as close as you're going to get. Or even, you know, like I'll Be Home for Christmas. And what's funny is I was thinking about I'll Be Home for Christmas. And as I was just listening to all these songs this week, I really began to pay attention to I'll Be Home for Christmas. In fact, I wanted you to listen to it as well. You really don't even want me to preach. You're just like, let's just keep that going. Just keep doing that. Yeah. Just be quiet, Brent. Put that back up there. Did you listen? I know we're familiar with these songs, but do you really listen to them, the words? I mean, think about this. Think about if you were a mom or your mom, you were singing this song to your mom. And imagine her listening, and the first few words of that song are, I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. What's your excitement? I mean, what's the feeling that comes there? Your mom, or if that's you hearing that song from your child, you're like, oh, yes, we're going to get together for Christmas. And then mom's heart's growing with excitement and warm. Yay, you're coming home, and she's there. And then you kind of make these list of demands. Please have snow. Little outside my control, but I'll see what I can do. And mistletoe, easy enough. I'm sure Walmart has a deal. Okay, mistletoe and presents under the tree. Well, you know, obviously there will be presents under the tree. And then you get to the last line. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams. Hold on. Wait, what? You said you can plan on me. And then you say in your dreams. Now, before anybody emails me and be like, Brent, this history of this song was people overseas and their hearts are, I get it, but come on, the lyrics say what they say. You can count on me, but I'm probably not coming. So you can sing this song to your mom if you really don't want to go home for Christmas. I'll be home for Christmas, in my dreams. Maybe it's in your dreams, I don't know. This song and the others that we've talked about already highlight one of the dangers of this time of year. We get this idea in our mind, this picture of what Christmas is supposed to be like. And even beyond that, sometimes we get this idea in our head of what life is supposed to be like. And we build up these expectations that before we know it, they get away from us. I read a story this week of how one year this employment agency was having a really hard time finding men who were willing to be Santa at the department stores. The reason was the previous year there was a high percentage of children kicking Santa in the shins for not coming through the year before. Yeah, no kidding, right? But think about it. You're an 8-year-old boy or girl, and last year you went to see Santa Claus and you said, Santa, what I really want is a puppy, and you get some Legos. And Legos are great, but it's not a puppy. So what do you do next year? I'm going to go find Santa. There you go. You let me down. They were having a hard time because no guys wanted to be kicked in the shin repeatedly. So these kids took it out on them. And our expectations, their kids' expectations were not met. And so often in our own lives, we find that our expectations may go unmet. You see, expectations, I think, are tricky things. There's a fine line between a realistic expectation and an unrealistic expectation. When we graduate from college, we think, I'm going to get a great job. I'm going to get a high-level job, making six figures because I'm worth it. And we go out into the job market, and we find that may or may not be, most likely not be, true. We get married. Oh, let's talk about expectations in marriage. We get married and we think, oh, this is just going to be like every rom-com I've ever seen. It's going to be awesome and amazing. And then it takes you, what, less than 24 hours to go, oh, see, the newlyweds over here are laughing the loudest. Did you catch that? Exactly. Some of us that have been around a while, been married a little while, it's not nearly as funny 23 years in. But man, you know what it's like. You have all these expectations and things are going to be perfect and it's going to be just like every commercial and movie I've ever seen. And you know what? We carry that little thing over because we think, well, marriage isn't quite what I expected, but parenting will be. Okay, I don't even have to say anything there. We buy a house and we love the idea of home ownership and everything's going to be great. Or even when we follow Jesus, we think, man, this is going to be great. I'll never have any problems or difficulties. Life is just going to be good. But what we find out is reality sometimes doesn't match up with our expectations, and it leaves us with a gap. And we have to figure out what happens or what do we do with this gap. Because this gap can really mess with us in a lot of ways. I mean, we get out of college and yeah, we get a job, but you know what you find is you start kind of at the bottom and you don't make what you thought you would make and you really have to work hard and you have to prove yourself and be better than your coworkers. And then after years of working hard, you get recognized and bumped up. Marriage is awesome. I highly recommend it. But let me just tell you, it is hard work. Romantic comedies are garbage and lie. And it's not like that every day. It's work and ditto for parenting. Home ownership is great. I love having my home. But you know what? Everything has a lifespan. Water heaters and air conditioners and siding on your house. And I mean, you can just make the list. And usually there's another zero on the end of whatever you think it's going to cost to replace it. And, you know, yes, life, I believe, is better with Jesus than without. But the one thing I've learned is it does not guarantee me a hardship-free life just because I follow him. If we're honest, the chances of reality living up to our expectations are often slim and none. Nothing could live up to the image we create sometimes in our minds. We have our sights set on perfection, and we get something less. And Instagram, Pinterest are not our friends in this category, because sometimes we want this and we get that.
Yes.
Right? All right, go ahead, parents, admit it. How many of you tried to recreate some of those Instagram, Pinterest pictures and failed? Yep, exactly. We want the left picture. We get the right picture. And our expectations at Christmas and even in life leave us with a mixture of emotions. That gap that exists between our circumstances and our expectations can lead us to disappointment and frustration and cynicism and even hopelessness. So what do we do with that gap? That's what I want us to look at today. Often when we think of Christmas and our perfect idea of Christmas, we think about that perfect Christmas 2,000 years ago. And the reason we want perfect was because we think everything was so perfect back then, or so we think. I mean, these are the images that we have. Ladies, after giving childbirth, is that what you looked like? Is that what you wanted? A bunch of strange, smelly men coming in with their animals, coming into your hospital room? No, sure, come on in. This will be great. No, bring the animals too. It's all good. I mean, seriously, we have so sterilized this image of Christmas. When, if we think about it, Mary was most likely around 13 years old. Joseph has to believe this woman that said, no, really, I got pregnant by God. They're traveling, 9 months pregnant traveling. They couldn't find a place, a house that I'm sure is not luxurious like, you know, the Mercy and Methodist West over here, like the Hilton if you have a child. So they end up, we think of this nice little stable scene. No, it's most likely a cave for housing animals where animals ate and didn't just eat. They did other things. If you know what I mean, just take a, yeah, smell that. Now, ladies, how many of you are thinking, that's what I want?
Natural.
And natural, yes. No epidural. Yes, let's talk about that. And yet here we have Mary, just radiant Jesus in her arms. You know, we have sterilized this so much. And you know what is funny about Jesus, or not funny, just interesting, is it's not just this image that we've sterilized. For many of us, we've sterilized his entire ministry. And when we think about our expectations or the expectations of the people back then, it wasn't just his birth that was this way. It was his whole life and ministry. In fact, there's an interesting story in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 11 that actually talks about expectations. You see, John the Baptist, the prophet, he finds himself in jail. He finds himself sitting here, and he's thinking about Jesus. He's hearing about what's going on. And as he sits in jail, he's trying to figure out, okay, this isn't going exactly like I thought it would. I'm sitting here for doing what I was supposed to do. Knowing his life was going to end probably very soon because he wasn't well liked by Herod. And yet I see Jesus out there, and Jesus isn't behaving, isn't talking, isn't acting anything like I thought the Messiah would. In Matthew chapter 11, we get this story. It says this, it says, when John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is being proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. Here's John the Baptist, as I said, sitting in prison. He's in prison because he decided he was going to speak out against Herod. Herod was the ruler. Herod married his brother's wife, Herodias. And John basically said, you can't do that. That's wrong. And Herod's like, prison for you, buddy. And as John languishes in prison trying to figure out, he hears about Jesus. And he's thinking, what's going on? Now put yourself in John's shoes for just a moment. Here's a man who has served God his entire life. He had his own miraculous birth story. I mean, his parents were childless and were too old to have children, and yet an angel appeared to them as well and said, "You're going to have a kid," and they did. And he goes out and he's preaching to the masses, and he's challenging power, and he's talking about the coming Messiah, and he's talking about the message of repentance. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is near. And he's even there when Jesus wants to be baptized. In fact, he's the one. He recognizes Jesus. He says, "I'm not worthy to baptize you." And he's willing to do it anyway because Jesus is like, "No, you've got to." And as he baptizes Jesus, John is there in that moment where the heavens open up, a dove descends on Jesus, and there's this voice that says, "This is my son. I love him. With you, I am well pleased." John experienced all that, but yet now he's sitting in a prison, fully aware he's not going to get out. He knows he's going to die here, and what he finds is his present circumstances aren't matching his expectations. Something's going on. You see, the Israelites were under Roman rule. They were occupied by Roman forces, and many people had high expectations of what the Messiah would do. They expected a Messiah who was going to rush in with power, who was going to rise up with an army and start taking over and kicking the Romans out. And we'd know, if you study the history, that there had been several of these type leaders who had risen up, several who had said, "I'm the Messiah, I'm the one, follow me." And one by one, these leaders are taken out, and Rome continues to remain power. And when Jesus comes on the scene, he claims to be the Messiah. There's this miraculous birth story. There's all these things going on. Jesus is doing things that no one has done. He's teaching in ways that no one has taught before. And yet John, through all that he's seen and known and experienced, he's still asking the question, "Are you the one? Are you what we really are looking for?" When they expected power and might to overthrow the government, what they got was someone going around and making friends with sinners and outsiders and outcasts. Jesus wasn't judging people. He was healing them and forgiving them. And this style of ministry is so confusing for John that he begins to question it, whether or not Jesus is the real deal or not. Was he what they expected him to be? No. Was he the one they had waited for? They're not sure. Was he worthy of their trust? That's what John wants to know. Maybe you're like John, and you find a gap between your present circumstances and your perfect expectations, and that's causing you some trouble in your life. When this happens, I think there is, as I've already said, a flood of emotions that can overwhelm us if we're not careful. The first response, I think, would be confusion, and I think John highlights that for us. He was expecting a powerful king, somebody to come in and start kicking butt and taking names, and that's not what Jesus did. And John wants to know, where's the revolution? Where's the revolt? And beyond that, he's probably looking at his own life and saying, well, what have I been doing? What have I given my life for? Why am I sitting here in this jail if this guy's not the guy who's going to come in and take over? You see, this one's easy for me to understand because more than one time in my life, there's been occasions where I have prayed about decisions and believed I was fully following God's direction for my life. I felt like God was saying, do this. In fact, believe it or not, this weekend, 7 years ago, is exactly one of these moments for me. I followed a friend to Iowa to work here in this church, and 7 years ago, he resigned. And it left me kind of going, well, okay. Because I didn't know if I'd be here. I didn't know if I would be asked to leave. I didn't know if I needed to find a new job. I was just sitting in a state of complete confusion. And you know what? My expectations of what was supposed to happen here certainly weren't meeting my current circumstances. And being in that gap caused me great confusion. Not only does it cause confusion, but I think it can cause us all a lot of questions. John did this. He couldn't go anywhere, so he sends a couple of guys to ask this burning question, who are you? And sometimes it doesn't end with that question, although when our circumstances cause us great pain, asking questions like, God, where are you, are very common. Why didn't you do something? These are understandable questions. We might even ask, why am I here? What do I believe? Because in that gap, we find a crisis of faith that will lead us to challenge, have I been believing the wrong thing? I mean, that's what John is asking. He says, are you the one, or should we expect someone else? Is it worth continuing to follow you, or is there another way? If we aren't careful, our unmet expectations can lead us to bitterness. And let's be honest, when we expect one thing and get another, we're disappointed. And it hurts. We experience pain. And you know what? I don't want us to pretend like it doesn't. And bitterness can well up in our hearts, and bitterness can lead us to blame, blaming God, blaming our spouses, blaming our bosses. All this blame because we're thinking, why has it been this way? And we're looking somewhere to point the finger. Ultimately, I think when we think about our unmet expectations and the gap that exists, there's two different paths that we'll either take. And the first one is this: we will respond possibly with disbelief. I think this is the place where John was. Are you the one? Are you worth believing? Are you worth following? Or should I be going somewhere else and finding someone else? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been in a moment of crisis where you've thought, I don't know if I should keep doing this. My faith doesn't seem to be working out. It's not exactly like I thought it is. Maybe that relationship fell apart and you're thinking, I just don't believe in us anymore. It's very easy. In fact, I don't blame anyone. I certainly don't blame John for getting to that place because I could see it in myself. Where those expectations go unmet and you think, it's just not worth it. And I'll just walk away. But that doesn't have to be the outcome, because even though it could be disbelief, it can also be this. It can lead us to confidence and trust and dedication. It can cause us, instead of pulling us away from God and pulling us away from whatever may be not meeting our expectations, it can actually cause us to kind of dig in. And I believe that's exactly what we see happening in John's life. How do I know? Because just a few chapters over in Matthew, we see how John's story plays out. In this really messed up system, Herod has a birthday, and he decides to give his stepdaughter anything she wants for the birthday. And she says, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. Now, if I thought John got to a place of disbelief, you know what I think would have happened? Whoa, I was just kidding. Let me bless your marriage. I'll be good with it. I won't say anything else against it. It's all for you. But that's not what happened. John stayed firm in faith, and he continued to dedicate himself to the cause of Christ all the way up to and including his death. Does that mean John had all his questions answered? I don't think so. I think he probably still was left scratching his head because his disciples come back, and what'd they tell him? Oh, well, he's healing people. And he's preaching this message, and John's probably thinking, I know that. Okay, maybe this is how it is. But he had in the back of his mind, I'm sure, still thinking, what about the revolution? You know, what I love about this story is Jesus' response to John. You see, I am not always the most gracious person. Mercy is not one of high on my spiritual gifts list. If you've ever been on the receiving end of that, I am sorry. But I expect when people question me, I want to question back. I want to get defensive. What do you mean questioning me? But Jesus, who had every right to push back, doesn't. You see, when John's disciples come and ask this very pointed question, are you the one? You're not what we expect. Jesus doesn't do what Brent would do most likely. Get out of my face. Stop asking me such stupid questions. What do you mean, am I the one? Go back and tell him, yes, you know better than this. But we don't see that from Jesus. In fact, what we find in Jesus is a response of love and compassion. Go tell John what you've seen. Tell him about the miracles. Tell him about who's following me. And then Jesus makes this statement at the end. He says, blessed is anyone who doesn't stumble on account of me. This is an interesting statement to me because Jesus knew his teaching was unexpected. He knew that he was out of the norm. And he's telling them in this moment, he says, look, I know you had these expectations. But if you can trust, if you can see beyond what you think you want and need, and trust me to actually show you what is better. And that's where I think we stumble sometimes, because things happen in this world and we don't understand. And I'm not telling you this morning God caused it, because I don't believe that. But we live in a broken world where bad things happen to people, and our expectations of how life was supposed to be do not match our present circumstances, and it causes us great pain and great difficulty. And Jesus looks at us and responds with love and compassion, and he says to us, don't let this cause you to stumble. I know it's not what you expected. I know it's not how you would have had it play out. But if you trust, if you follow, if you dedicate yourself to me, I'm the one that can redeem what has happened in your life. I love Christmas time. I also hate Christmas time. I live in conflict. But I love Christmas. But Christmas really highlights for us a real big problem. We have these crazy, outrageous expectations. And so often it falls short. And because we have these expectations, what ends up happening is we miss what's right in front of us because we're focused on what we thought we would rather have. I can remember several years ago, we were having Christmas with some family, and the day was carrying on, and dinner or lunch, whatever meal you have at 3 p.m, wasn't quite ready. And we were getting hungry. And so some of us kind of snuck in the kitchen and started snacking a little bit. And the host of this party, I'm not going to tell you who it is because I don't want to embarrass her, but it bothered her. She always had this idea, picture of what these family holidays should look like. And the simple act of some of us going and grabbing a piece of turkey just to snack on really quick shattered that expectation. And it ended up with tears. Yeah, tears and hurt feelings. And it was kind of interesting to me. For me, it was just a piece of turkey. For her, it was the shattering of the Norman Rockwell painting of family coming together for Christmas. And what's crazy is in that moment, instead of saying, you know what, this isn't as important. My whole family's here. We get to celebrate Christmas together. That's okay. It ruined the rest of the day. Sometimes our expectations take our eyes off what we have in front of us, maybe what God is trying to, how he's trying to redeem our situation, but we can't see that because we're too focused on the unmet expectations. What are you expecting this Christmas season? What are you hoping to happen? Or maybe something's already happened in your life. Maybe there's somewhere, something in your life that's already unexpected. And you're in that tension and turmoil trying to figure out, what am I going to do with that gap? Are you going to be confused? Is it going to lead to bitterness? Or is it going to lead you to a place where you're just like, I'm not interested, I'm walking away? Or maybe, can it lead us to a place of where we're just honest with God? You see, God is big enough God to answer, to ask our questions too. He doesn't look at us and say, don't ask me that. In fact, he's a God that I think encourages that. When our expectations go unmet, God is a God that says, you know what? Bring those expectations to me. Christmas is a time that can be the most wonderful time of the year or the most difficult time of the year. The question is, where will we put our focus? On the expectations? On the circumstances, or the one beyond, to say, you know what? I can see Jesus through this, and I'll trust him to get me through. I know that sounds like a trite answer, and I don't like saying trite answers in church, but I will tell you, I think there is some truth to that. That at some level, we just have to say, okay, I know God, and the God I know is not a hateful God. He's not a vengeful God. He does not want to cause his children pain. And even though this stuff may have happened to me, God can help me through. God can see me through. God can give me the comfort and the peace and the grace and eventually even bring joy back to my life. What are you struggling with this morning? Do you have some expectations where you feel let down Maybe it's let down by your boss. Maybe it's let down by a friend, a spouse, a relationship, or maybe you do feel let down with God. I'm here to tell you that's okay. But this morning, I want to encourage you to just cry out to God in this moment and just say, God, I'm disappointed. I'm hurting. I'm struggling. And allow God to come in and fill you and show you how he can take our unmet expectations and do something even better through them.